Hey there, listeners. Vermont Edition co-host Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited and condensed for clarity and brevity. Enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Today on the show, we'll be joined by a Republican candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives, Erica Reddick. She's one of two Republicans currently seeking the party's nomination ahead of Vermont's August 9th primary. But first, we're headed into nature to discuss the spongy moth caterpillar. Many Vermonters are noticing an influx of the larva on their trees, and in some cases on their bodies, too. The recent dry conditions have limited the presence of a fungus that naturally kills this invasive species, which means they're out in force again this year. Today on the show, we are joined by Judy Rozovsky, Vermont's state entomologist. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
We are also joined on the line by Tim Smith, a Rutland City forester and arborist. Tim, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Have you noticed spongy moths or other invasive species outdoors recently? Or are you wondering what to do to keep them at bay? Join the conversation. Give us a call at 800-639-2211. You can also email us at vermontedition@vpr.org or tweet us at Vermont Edition. Well, Judy, let's start with the basics here. For those who aren't familiar with this species, what exactly is a spongy moth and a caterpillar?
Okay, well, I should point out that they've recently experienced a name change. So the spongy moth used to be known as the gypsy moth, but because gypsy is a pejorative term for the Romani people, the Entomological Society of America added it to its better common name. So now we call it the spongy moth. So that might help people identify it. Mm-hmm. And then it's not a native species. It was brought over here by a French guy named Trouvelet who wanted to find a competitor for silk moths. And he brought it to his lab in Medford, Massachusetts, and they got out and, you know, started to wreak havoc 10 or 20 years later and have been spreading ever since. So
we could blame Massachusetts for this?
We can. Yep.
So a competitor for silkworms, you said?
Yeah. So there was a big silk industry in New England. Who knew? Huh. And there's a really good article about it. I can send you the link.
I love that.
And except silk moths are persnickety, they're rays, I guess. And I know there were some other issues with them, so it was hoped that a better insect that was easier to manage could be found, and so that's what brought this all on.
Mm, okay, so does the spongy moth also create a type of silk?
Well, they release a silk thread, so this time of year they've just started to hatch, and they're going to climb to the tops of trees. They'll release their little silk thread. They'll be holding on to one end, and it's called ballooning. They sort of waft off into the air and get carried elsewhere. So I guess it can produce silk, but they don't make nests or anything like some of the other caterpillars do, like, the tent caterpillars, for example.
Mm, okay. So an unsuccessful experiment in Massachusetts has led us to this moment. Tim Smith in Rutland, what are you noticing this year? Are you seeing a preponderance of these spongy moth caterpillars?
So far in Rutland, I haven't noticed any of them, but this past weekend, I was outside of my house. I live in Orwell, which is slightly north and west of Rutland, about 30 minutes. There was quite a few. They must have hatched recently, just last Friday or Saturday, and there was quite a few of the small larvae crawling around all over the place, over everything, decks and anything you leave outside.
So what are they attracted to? Are they looking for something to eat or a place to lay their eggs?
Yeah, so probably part of the reason why I'm seeing them more towards that way, and we had a huge outbreak in western Vermont last year, is due to the fact that spongy moth caterpillar's preferred host tree species is oak. And the farther you go in towards the Champlain Valley, we have quite a bit of oak over that way. So we're seeing pretty large numbers and pretty large outbreak in the past few years. over that way. And Rutland, I didn't see. I had reports of a few people, homeowners, having some of the spongy moth caterpillars on the trees, but the population wasn't large enough to really be noticeable as far as defoliation goes over in Rutland.
And speaking of defoliation, can you describe what a tree, like an oak tree, for example, might look like once spongy moths have taken their full toll?
Yeah, totally. Over, like I said, towards the west, over there, portions of the forest that I would drive through on my way home, where it's heavily oak forest, it looks like it'll be July, and you'll feel like, minus the snow, it'll look like it's middle of January. There won't be a single, they can get such high populations in those oak stands that there's not a single leaf on some of the trees.
Wow. And will that kill the tree eventually?
It won't. So there's a lot of factors that go into that. It won't. Most healthy trees, if they're otherwise healthy, it will not kill them. They'll actually, in fact, push out a second flush of growth later in the summer. So they'll refoliate sometime probably August or September, but that can lead into a lot of other issues as well for the tree. Obviously, the tree's not going to be growing very well that year, because it's going to have to use, it's not producing any of its own food. It's using some of the stored carbohydrates in the roots. So the problem is it's going to use all that up to send out that second flush of leaves, and you're not going to be noticing much tree growth that year at all.
Well, listeners, if you've been noticing spongy moth caterpillars or other invasive species, other insects you've been wondering about, give us a call, 800-639-2211. Judy Rozovsky, with the you work for the state, and I'm curious to hear what the Vermont government is able to do to study these invasive insects and how they're spreading throughout the state.
So I work for the Vermont Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Markets, and we usually fill a regulatory role as far as invasive species go. But we have been involved in past spray projects, because usually it's a federally sponsored aerial spray that has been used to control these widespread defoliating caterpillars, not just spongy moths, but the Agency of Natural Resources, Forest Parks and Recreation folks did a forest tent caterpillar spray project. But the problem is that the federal funding for this kind of approach isn't as readily available as it used to be. And so the state isn't planning to do any spray programs, mostly because our resources are limited. So we did, or Forest and Parks tried to coordinate landowners who wanted to have aerial sprays, and tried to help facilitate that with contact with, people who do this kind of work. But that's about as involved as the state was this year.
Well, let's pause here on this topic of spraying, because I know we've gotten a number of questions from folks wondering what to do to combat the spongy moth caterpillars from attacking their trees. And the question of spraying always comes up. Tim, let's start with you. What if somebody is thinking about spraying their trees? How does that work? What's the right time to do it? And what type of pesticide would be used?
Yeah, so there's obviously, if it's like a few trees in your yard, it might be applicable to spray them. The spray that's most commonly used, it's Bacillus thuringiensis. So it's generally, it's not harmful to many of the beneficial insects and other animals out there, but it's not going to make any sense to cost-wise, if you're talking about a stand of trees. Like if you say you own 100 acres, you're not going to go out and be able to spray or have an airplane come over and spray all of that. So as far as that goes, there's not a lot you can do as a woodlot owner. But in your yard, you could have a local tree service. If they do pesticide applications, they can do that. But also on smaller trees, there's a few different ways. You can use duct tape around the stem of the tree with the sticky side out, and that should catch some of the caterpillars crawling up the tree, as well as wrapping it in burlap. The caterpillars get stuck in that, and then you can shake them off into a substance such as soapy water that will kill the caterpillar. And I also think, so combining all this is kind of like integrated pest management is what they refer to it as. You can also get ahead of the game and scrape some of the egg masses off of the trees when you see them before they hatch. It's a little too late for that now, but the egg masses are probably, Judy could explain this better than I could, but they're probably like 1 to 2 inches ovular shaped. And they look kind of like a sponge, a yellow sponge color. But as far as it
being, sorry, I'm grimacing over here. Yellowish colored egg masses are not what I was planning to talk about today, but let's do it. Judy, can you talk to us a bit more about these egg masses and removing them in a way that effectively can control these populations on an individual tree, at least?
Sure. And before I get into the egg masses, I concur with what Tim said about spraying. I wanted to mention a couple things that, so the BT, the Bacillus thuringiensis, is, it's really most effective when the caterpillars are tiny. So when insects hatch from an egg, we call them an instar, and every time they molt after that, it's another instar. So these spongy moths have just hatched, so they're first instar, and soon they're going to eat and grow and molt, and they'll be second instar, and that's really when the BT is most effective. So the problem is that most people won't notice them right now because they're tiny. But, BT is a biocontrol, so it's a non-chemical option. So Tim was mentioning IPM. It's a really useful tool, but you have to use it soon before the caterpillars get too big, because then it's not effective. So as for the egg masses, they're sort of a beige-colored oval. That's a great description. And the eggs themselves are little round eggs, but they're covered with a hairy coating to kind of protect the eggs. So the people can treat them with oils, but really the easiest thing is to just scrape them off. The problem is that a lot of these egg masses can get really high up in these huge oak trees. And that's also a problem with trying to get a pest control contractor to come and treat your trees. Like, say you have an ornamental that you highly value or that adds value to your house, they can only spray up so high. So there's limitations with treating these. And you can also put burlap bands. You fold a burlap band and put it around your tree. Remember not to put anything sticky directly on your tree trunk, because a lot of sticky products are petroleum based, and so they can harm the tree. They can sort of soak in and cause flow issues. Another problem with sticky stuff is sometimes you get things stuck to it. Like if somebody sees a beautiful butterfly stuck to their tree band, they might be unhappy about that. But it does help to, stop the caterpillars from climbing up everything. And we are probably gonna have a lot of them out there this year. So I just wanna warn people, you can physically remove them. There is a point this summer where you will be totally disgusted if you have them. They'll be, chewing leaves and producing, we call poop, frass is the science word.
Good word.
And there'll just be a rain of little green chewed up stuff coming down. That's the caterpillar frass. So gird your loins. It's going to happen again this year like it did last summer.
Well, for all the 12-year-olds who might be listening and looking for a new word for poop, I think you've just thrilled them all. Let's go now to Scott in Essex Junction before we have to take a quick break. Scott, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks. Hi, I'm in Essex Junction. That's in Chittenden. Last year, I have a small property with half a dozen or 8 oak trees on it, and just 3 of them were stripped clean and the other one's relatively untouched. Those same tree have quite a hatch out again this year. I've put the tape on and I've already collected thousands of the smallest instars. They're already at their second phase. They're at about a centimeter long now. I do have BTK. I'm trying to get that up on the leaves, but it's a mighty oak. So good luck with that. So I expect I am going to be listening to the frass kicking through the leaves during the night again this year.
Well, thanks for calling, Scott. Tim, Rutland City Forester and Arborist, do you have any other suggestions for Scott?
Yeah, totally. Anything you can do to help improve the vigor of that tree or any of those trees. And I guess sometimes watering might be excessive, like that might be kind of hard to water such a large tree, but fertilization, the big thing, because these trees are going to be using up a lot of their stored energy reserves if they get defoliated. So if you can get some fertilization, maybe I would go ahead and do a proper soil sample and have a test maybe through the extension, UVM extension. They can help you with an analysis of what you need around those trees, but the fertilizing and watering can help them when they're extremely stressed, can give them a little bit of extra help because they won't be producing their own food this year if they get defoliated.
Now, I have to say, Judy, I was looking to kill a little time yesterday on Facebook, and I was on my like neighborhood Facebook pages, and they were taken over by conversations about the spongy moth, both people trying to get rid of them on their trees and folks posting rash photos, which were a bit tough to stomach. But a lot of people are saying that they're getting rashes from bites from these caterpillars. Now, I know you're an entomologist and not a doctor, and we're not offering medical advice here, but I'm wondering what you've been hearing perhaps from your colleagues about these rashes and where they're coming from.
Sure. So first I have to fess up that the first photo I got with the these rashes, and they're actually from the hairs of the caterpillar, not the bites. I just didn't believe that is what the source of the problem was, but my intrepid colleague Ginger Nickerson, who's our forest pest outreach coordinator, found some videos, and I had to admit that she was right and I was wrong. So there are actually a large number of caterpillars that can cause an itchy skin reaction, and they have, here's another new word for you, urticating hairs. Urticating. It's basically an irritating hair. They have a barb at the end. So when these hairs contact people, they can cause a skin reaction. And apparently kids are more sensitive to this than adults, and not everybody has equal sensitivity. So be careful if there are a lot of the little caterpillars bopping around, don't get in contact with them. And I guess some of the photos we were sent, kids were out in the water on those hot days, and a lot of the little larvae had floated into the water, and maybe that's how they were getting in contact with those hairs.
Oh, wow. So even in the water, the hairs can cause irritation.
Yeah. Huh. I was quite surprised. So if you see an inexplicable itchy rash, look around for caterpillars.
All right. Don't immediately blame the mosquito, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. No, the photos we saw, they had a lot of marks on them. It was a little horrifying.
Well, let's go back to the phones to Greg and Charlotte. Greg, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I own Teacher's Tree Service, and we're injecting trees with a formulation of acephate, and the caterpillars start dropping out of the tree dead in a few hours, and it lasts for 4 to 6 weeks.
Wow. How long have you been using this treatment? Is this something new or something that's been around that your company's used for a couple of years now?
Well, we used it a lot last year, and we learned a lot, like which species of trees it works best on and which trees we can't use it on. And it's been used, you know, in New England for quite some time. But last year was the first outbreak we've had of this size in 30 years, so we had to learn fast, and we've already injected, you know, maybe a couple hundred trees in the last 3 days.
Oh,
and
wow.
And it's we're getting a lot of panic calls and people texting photographs and updates and when are you going to be here kind of messages. So
well, I guess I'm glad to hear that I have company, that other people are sending lots of photos of these caterpillars to not just my inbox. And everyone, you could stop doing that now. Thank you for all of your photos. Tim Smith, let's talk about these injections that Greg and Charlotte just brought up that his company's doing. Is that something that you found helps trees?
Yeah, injections are great when you can inject pesticides. They call it a systemic pesticide injection, it means that all of the material, when you spray, obviously some of the spray goes up into the air and it can be volatile. So it gases off into the atmosphere and can get all over other things, like non-target things, I guess I'd say. But any injected pesticide or insecticide, I guess you'd call it, is a win-win because all of it's going into the tree. You're not getting it all over everything else. And hopefully it usually just gets the targeted insects, things that are chewing on the leaves, not any other beneficial thing that's out there on the leaf surface. So we use it a lot in Rutland. We inject every other year. We're injecting for emerald ash borer. That's a different topic, obviously, but it's much safer to the public, obviously, when you can keep it in the stem of the tree.
And Greg mentioned that his company's been getting a lot of panicked calls. For folks who might also be feeling a bit of panic about the health of their trees and can't get a hold of somebody from a tree service, is this something that you could do yourself?
The injections?
Yes.
It depends on what material you're using. I'm not really familiar with the one he's using, but if they're restricted use pesticides, you cannot buy them unless you're commercial applicator. You have to have a license to buy most of the, and I probably wouldn't recommend injecting trees because there's a lot of different science behind how many holes and how much you put in each hole. It depends on the size of the tree, so it could probably cause more harm than good. I would try and reach out to a tree service that's doing it, or you could consult with some of the state foresters in your area, county foresters. But for an insect such as this, I probably wouldn't try doing it yourself. You may cause more harm than good. I would just try doing the things such as fertilizing and keeping your trees healthy, watering them. And even on younger trees, like in my yard last year, I would just pick the caterpillars off and kind of squish them in my hands. It's kind of gross, but
I also saw a suggestion from somebody on a Facebook page about arming neighborhood children with super soakers filled with soapy water and having them spray the caterpillars as a joke or as a game. So that seems like slightly safer option.
I would warn against that just because it's one thing if they're on like non-vegetation surfaces, but the soap, if it gets onto any foliage, any leaves, it can burn the leaves and kill them. So I wouldn't do that.
All right. No super soakers. Thank you for the warning.
If they're on like siding and porches and stuff, you could do that, but no trees. You don't want soap on foliage.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are discussing the spongy moth and how to keep spongy moth caterpillars at bay. Give us a call at 800-639-2211. You can also email us at vermontedition@vpr.org. Now, Tim, you just brought up the emerald ash borer. It's yet another invasive insect here in Vermont. Judy, could you talk to us a bit about the emerald ash borer and maybe some other invasives to keep an eye out for this year?
Sure. And again, before I do that, before we leave the spongy moth,
please,
I should mention there is a fungus that was also an introduced species that's been responsible for the spongy moth not getting into large populations in the past few years. And it's possible that it will be around in sufficient numbers this year to control the spongy moths. We just don't know. It's all new terrain because this fungus just showed up for the first time 30 years ago. So it's a big natural experiment about what's going to happen.
Sorry, just to pause there. So that's interesting because I think, you know, when we think about invasive species a lot, it's often discussed as kind of an across the board bad thing. But it sounds like maybe this fungus could help us control a particular species that's really causing damage.
It's so true. We do often bring in biocontrols as insect controls for invasives. We're trying to, for example, the emerald ash borer, there's a perfect example. We have identified some non-native insects that would fairly specifically attack that insect and have been introducing them. And again, that's been spearheaded by the Agency of Natural Resources, Forest Parks and Recreation, and sponsored by the USDA. So it's a cooperative effort to help it won't help control the infestation right now when all the big trees are still out there, but we're hoping that after the first wave of the emerald ash borer has taken out a lot of the ash trees, that the ash trees coming up as regeneration after that wave will be protected by this, the introduced biocontrols. There are like four different species of tiny stingless wasps.
So, and I've also heard about the spotted lantern fly, another invasive species. Could you tell us a bit about that one?
Sure. So spotted lantern fly was first found in Pennsylvania in 2014. We think it had been there for at least a year or two before that. They're very much like the spongy moth in that they hitchhike on everything. They can lay their eggs on everything. They hop into everything. The first one they found in New Jersey, I think, had hitched a ride in a woman's purse. So it's quite likely we're going to get them up here. And what we're hoping to do is engage citizens in helping us find them and squelching any live ones that we get here. I don't know, Tim, if you heard about the live ones that were found in Rutland last year.
I did hear about that, yes.
Yeah, so we don't
have any myself, but.
Sorry?
Oh, I haven't seen any of them myself, but I heard that there was a few found here, yes.
Right, and they were killed. So we don't have an established population in Vermont, but we do keep finding dead ones. And, you know, based on what's happening in other states, it's quite likely we're going to get them here. And our hope is we can just suppress those populations and, you know, fend them off for a while.
Let's go to the phones again. We have time for one more call. David in Wilmington, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say that the $50 million surplus in the state budget could go a long way towards gypsy moth control to save these trees that are so vital to controlling global warming.
Thank you, David. And just a reminder to our listeners, we are calling them the spongy moth. They've gone under a rebranding. But I did want to ask about global warming here and climate change. Judy, what effect do you think climate change could have on the spongy moth population?
Well, they sure like dry weather, and that will knock off the fungus, too. So it's looking good for the spongy moth if climate change keeps progressing. Not so good for the rest of us.
Yes, and Tim, for you as well, what do you think about the future of this invasive species in Vermont? Are you thinking that we have a long road ahead of us, or could this just be a couple year blip?
I think it's a long road ahead of us. Like Judy just hinted towards the climate change and the dryness, like. We've been getting rain, obviously, the past few days here and there, but when it goes those dry bouts, it doesn't allow the bacteria, I guess, actually, the natural controls to breed, I guess you'd call it, for lack of better terms, and control the caterpillar in that way. So that, and then also we're supposed to be shifting towards more of an oak hickory forest in the future as years go by, just because of the slightly warmer summers. The oak trees may outcompete a lot of our maple, and oak is the preferred species of spongy moth.
Well, let's end on a positive note if we can. Judy, as the state's entomologist, anything redeeming about the spongy moth that you can tell us?
Well, sure. I will say that since it's been here for a long time, maybe since the early 20s, I just haven't seen that much oak mortality. So I think it's one of those things where the ecosystem is going to adjust. And some people say that actually all that frass raining down on the forest floor is a good thing because it adds nutrients. So there you go.
Judy Rozovsky is Vermont's state entomologist, and Tim Smith is Rutland City forester and arborist. Thank you both so much for joining the show today.